Paris is tired. Not dramatic tiredness, not revolutionary fire. A deeper exhaustion, the kind that settles in after years of uncertainty, shifting rules and promises that never quite deliver stability. Inside the halls of government, that fatigue has turned into motion. In early 1799, France's governing bodies are convened under the language of emergency. There are warnings of plots, rumors of instability, claims that the existing constitutional order can no longer protect itself. Meetings are called, councils convene, papers circulate. Everything feels urgent. Napoleon does not seize the moment. The moment seems to move towards him. And he fits neatly into that frame. He is positioned as the man who can be trusted when things feel fragile. The general who restored order before, the figure associated with competence, not ideology.
Welcome to the Members in the Room podcast, where we share real-life stories about leadership and their underlying human behavior rooted in science and research. We unpack and interpret the evolutionary forces behind it to help you to better lead your people for outstanding business results.
Welcome back to the Mammoth in the Room, where we explore leadership lessons that stand the test of time, using history and neuroscience to explain the human behavior behind pivotal decisions, because those same patterns still shape how leaders and teams succeed or fail in organizations today. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, CEO of Mammoth Leadership Sciences. This is episode 3 in our multi-episode journey through the rise of Napoleon Bonaparte. In the first episode, we explored the chaos that made his emergence possible. In a second, we saw how success, myth, and institutional failure made his rise feel inevitable. Today, we cross a line. Brumaire, a month in the French revolutionary calendar named after fog, corresponds to early November 1799. They're referring to the moment when Napoleon moved to formally take power. What matters here isn't just what happened, but how it happened. There are no crowds in the streets, no banners, no speeches calling for loyalty or sacrifice. What unfolds is quiet, procedural, and oddly restrained. This is not about storming of palaces or blood-soaked revolution. This is about when leadership becomes authority, when influence hardens into power, and when people accept it not because they're convinced, but because they are exhausted. In moments of acute uncertainty, human groups are wired to favor decisive authority. Delay feels more threatening than error. As Napoleon's status rises, feedback environments change. Disagreement becomes socially costly and therefore less likely to surface. It feels like administration. Success reinforces neural reward loops, compressing risk perception and making confidence feel indistinguishable from accuracy. And legitimacy often solidifies through collective relief when order replaces chaos, not through explicit consent. What remains is not a battle for power. It is a final step in making power official. And once authority appears inevitable, resistance declines because coordination against power feels futile. Once that shift occurs, nothing is truly reversible. The solution proposed is procedural. Everything is done on paper. Votes are taken, decrees are drafted, legal language fills the gaps where legitimacy has already eroded. The Constitution is not openly discarded. It is bent, stretched, and reinterpreted. Napoleon is not declared ruler. He is not named dictator. He is appointed as a general responsible for maintaining order and protecting the councils. This distinction matters. And so, resistance softens. From a behavioral perspective, this is a familiar pattern. When systems are unstable, people become more tolerant of concentrated authority if it appears rule-bound and limited. Procedure reduces perceived threat. It reassures the mind that control still exists. The council believe they are directing events. In reality, the structure being created places coercive capacity firmly in Napoleon's hands. Troops are positioned. Access is controlled. Movement is regulated. All under the banner of legality. Nothing here requires popular support. Nothing here requires enthusiasm. This is how power often changes hands in modern systems. Not through dramatic overthrow because someone storms the gates, but through compliance layered over fatigue and because those inside the gates begin to agree that the gates need guarding. Each step feels reasonable on its own. Each vote seems defensible. The cumulative effect is only visible once it's complete. Napoleon does not argue ideology. He does not make speeches about destiny. By the time the councils gather at Saint-Cloud, the environment has already shifted. What was once deliberation now takes place under armed supervision. What was once choice now feels constrained by circumstance. And the next moment will test whether procedure alone can hold, the moment of exposure, or when the mask slips. As Napoleon steps into the chamber, the atmosphere shifts. There are elected representatives. Voices, disorder. Deputies shout accusations. Cries of, "Down with the dictator!" echo through the hall. The language of emergency collapses into suspicion. Napoleon tries to speak, but the room does not settle. This is the first moment in years where Napoleon's authority is openly contested in public, without the buffer of rank or battlefield success. The confidence that served him in war does not translate cleanly into political legitimacy. He falters. He loses composure. His words do not land. This moment matters more than it appears. Napoleon is escorted out of the chamber by soldiers, nominally for his protection. But the image lingers. What was meant to look orderly now looks fragile. What was framed as necessary now feels contested. The councils meant to legitimize the transition have become unpredictable variables. This is the inflection point. Procedure has reached its limit. What remains is choice, and he allows others to act. His brother Lucien, presiding over the council, reframes the chaos as an attack on the Republic itself. Deputies are accused of endangering order. The narrative shifts rapidly from debate to threat. If resistance equals danger, then force becomes defense. And once that line is crossed, the outcome is no longer in doubt. Power prepares to show its final form. The moment legitimacy fractures, force moves in to fill the gap, order by muscle. After the chaos inside the Council of 500, the language shifts decisively. What had been framed as debate is now described as danger. What had looked like disagreement is reclassified as threat. Napoleon does not issue a dramatic command. There is no declaration of martial law. Instead, the situation is framed as spiraling out of control. The deputies inside the council are described as endangering the Republic. Order, it is argued, must be restored. Troops enter the hall. They did not arrive suddenly. They have been positioned in advance, not as an army, but as security. This distinction matters. The presence alone is enough. This is the precise moment power changes form. Until now, authority has been symbolic, procedural, and provisional. In this instant, it becomes physical. Decisions are no longer contested with words, but enforced by bodies. There is no blood path, no mass arrests, no spectacle of violence. The intervention is brief, contained, and framed as corrective rather than punitive. That containment is what makes it acceptable. Napoleon allows this logic to work in his favor. He does not stand at the center of the action. He remains adjacent to it. The intervention appears to come from the system itself, not from personal ambition. Opposition has been removed. Procedure has collapsed. Coercion has done what legality could not. Yet the transition still feels incomplete. And that ambiguity is intentional because power rarely consolidates in the moment it is taken. It is a quiet aftermath that matters most. And what follows the use of force is not outrage. It is explanation. Those who remain in position of influence begin to narrate events backwards. What felt abrupt in the moment is reframed as inevitable. What looked coercive becomes necessary. What violated procedure is described as preserving it, explained as justified, as necessary to defend the constitutional order. The councils issue statements. Newspapers soften their tone. Political actors who had hesitated days earlier now speak as if the outcome had been always obvious. Resistance fades not because it was defeated decisively, but because continuing it feels pointless. This is a familiar human response. Rationalization becomes adaptive. Individuals tell themselves that the alternative would have been worse, that chaos would have continued, that the intervention, however imperfect, restored a sense of direction. It doesn't need official buy-in. It just requires only resignation. Napoleon understands this intuitively. He does not demand loyalty. He does not insist on celebration. He allows silence to do the work. The absence of resistance becomes confirmation enough. Positions are retained. Careers continue. Those who align early are rewarded with relevance. Those who resist quietly disappear from influence, not through punishment, but through irrelevance. This is how power stabilizes without violence. The Republic has not been officially abolished, but it no longer governs. By the time the consulate is formally established, the decision has already been absorbed psychologically. The legal framework merely catches up to reality. Napoleon has crossed the line because no one was willing to keep disagreeing. He has not crowned himself. He has not abolished the Republic. He has not declared tyranny. And yet, something irreversible has happened. What makes Brumaire so unsettling is not its drama, but its restraint. There was no mass violence, no sweeping purge, no single moment that screamed, "This is a dictatorship now." Instead, there was procedure, fatigue, and a brief application of force that felt contained enough to accept. Again, this is how power often consolidates in the real world. And once authority is accepted psychologically, structures follow. Institutions arrange themselves. Language shifts. What once required justification becomes routine. And this is where the mammoth is fully in the room. Brumaire teaches us that the most dangerous moments in leadership are not the loud ones. They are the quiet transitions when force feels reasonable, when control feels calming, and when the loss of choice is disguised as relief. In the next episode, we'll see what happens after power settles, when authority no longer needs justification, and when success begins to rewrite a leader's perception of risk, limits, and reality itself. Because the greatest dangers of power rarely appear at the moment it is taken. All right, this was it for today. If this episode resonated with you, whether as a leader, a student of history, or someone curious about why power unfolds the way it does, please subscribe, rate, and share with someone in your network who would appreciate this kind of perspective. And a quick note before we close, Mammoth Leadership Sciences is very soon launching its online leadership academy. It's packed with insights, tools, and frameworks to help you become a more self-aware, adaptive leader. Keep an eye out. Lastly, if you want more, you can order my book. It shares the title of this podcast, The Mammoth in the Room. It's a practical roadmap showing how great leaders and their teams embrace evolutionary truths for outstanding results. And it does that across three sections, on people, on strategy, and on implementation. Until next time, lead wisely, think critically, and don't let ancient instincts hijack your modern leadership. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, and this is The Mammoth in the Room. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy this content, don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you on the next episode of The Mammoth in the Room.